You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's Sanderson Farms Championship. And joining me to break it all down, it's him. It's Sia Najad. Hey, Sia.
Rick, I love the Ryder Cup, and I love playoff season, but I am so happy to be back in sort of that our normal safe spot where we have normal DFS and we have a cut sweat and all of that stuff. A full field. This is glorious. I'm actually legitimately happy about normalcy starting today.
Yeah, this is just a warm blanket, right? This is just cozy. We're going to get a cut. We're going to have that sweat. There's golfers at all different price ranges. We don't have to worry about the captain spot or anything like that. This is home. I like this. I can do this.
This is home.
Sanderson Farms Country Club of Jackson has hosted this event every year since 2015, Mr. Sia. And you look at some of the past champions here. This is an event that has a handful of first-time winners. I think five of the last seven or eight have been first-time winners. But our defending champion is coming straight from Whistling Straits. That's Sergio Garcia, if you remember. Bryson DeChambeau won this in 2018. Kevin Na was right there in the middle in 2019. This is like, what are we looking for out of, kind of types of golfers for this week?
Well, apparently we're not looking for good putters. Sergio Garcia. No, but that's kind of comforting, right? So I think, first of all, let's just go granular there with the putting. I think you can kind of lean a little bit more this week on guys who maybe you wouldn't have faith in from a putting standpoint, because we know there's people that have had plenty of success here, like a Sergio Garcia, that have been kind of weak in the putting department. And Rick, I'm guessing I haven't looked at your site in terms of course dynamics yet this week, but I'm assuming that the off the tee game is going to be paramount here in terms of like where the advantage is. I think the approach game, you know, the wedge game in particular, 75 to 125, maybe to 150, I think that's going to be really crucial here as well. But, you know, the rough's not going to be very penal. So hit it far and you're probably going to be in pretty good shape. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. But I think based on previous winners, I think any sort of type of golfer can win here for sure.
Yeah, and let me correct this. Bryson DeChambeau did not win this event. I was very confused. Our outline is wrong. So our outline is a combination of Shriners and Sanderson Farms, I believe. That 2018 winner was Cameron Champ. Here are the real champions. Sergio Garcia, Sebastian Munoz, Cameron Champ, Ryan Armour, Cody Gribble. I was so confused when I was trying to figure out who the first-time winners are on that list. We have now corrected that. So that is the true facts here.
Well, there you go. And so, again, guys like Cam Champ and Sergio Garcia. I mean, Cam Champ's a bomber, but there's been guys here that Sergio hits it a long way, but there's definitely been previous champions or previous, top five guys that have not been the bomber type. Like Zach Johnson's a guy who's done well here, for example. So, I mean, I think you can, Ryan Moore probably, I'm not looking at his history right now, but I think he's done pretty well here in the past. So there's shorter hitters that can succeed here as well. So it's, again, this is one of those things where it's going to be, kind of a birdie fest again. I know that term at this point sort of gets overused, I think. But unfortunately, over the last few months, that's sort of been the case in a lot of these tournaments. And I think this one's going to be right up there. I mean, I think we're looking at, 18 under, 19 under, for the winner.
Yeah, on average, 19 under par usually gets the job done. I will share my screen. I will pull up my website. This is the course model that Sia was referencing, and we were kind of all over it. It's definitely a course that has benefited distance over accuracy. Sia, the rough, not penal, and the guy who kind of can get a little bit of a hot putter and make those birdies is the one that ends up either hoisting a trophy or having really good success. Sergio Garcia, not a very good putter, but in his his victory last year. I think he gained 2 strokes putting, which for Sergio might as well be 10, Sia, if he gains 2 strokes putting. So otherwise, it's a par 72. You're going to get the full complement of par fives. It's relatively long, 7,460 yards for that par 72 layout, and the green size about 6,200 square feet on average. So it's kind of, I don't want to say it's unique, it's not, but greens larger than normal. I think it's on the longer side. You can pick apart some of these par fives, but you're absolutely right. Birdie or better average, scoring, making enough of those putts are certainly going to go a long way, not only in fantasy scoring as they always do, but also on the leaderboard.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, in my model, I did incorporate, you know, birdie or better, you know, good drives I put in there as well. But yeah, the distance thing is definitely going to be more paramount, or I should say more important than accuracy.
All right, let's jump over to the cheat sheet here, because it's kind of an interesting little field. Sam Burns at the top, $11,000 most expensive golfer on the slate, rounding out the over 10K crowd. Will Zalatoris at 10,800, Sergio Garcia 10,500, Sung Jae Im at 10,300, and Corey Connors at 10,100. Let's go through this a little bit here. I'm a huge believer, Sia, in Sam Burns. I think he's kind of the modern player. He has this unbelievable ceiling. I think he is primed for a huge season, and that might just start right here in Jackson, Mississippi.
Absolutely. And I think this price tag, it's going to be kind of eye-popping to some people, including myself. But I think, you know, this, the pricing in this tournament, you know, I built a couple lineups, as everybody would know, and you can definitely play Sam Burns, and it's not prohibitive. It's not like, oh man, what am I going to do? Because I can't get any other guys near the top. I think, you know, when we go through the 9K range in particular, even down to some of the 8K guys, I think there's a lot of value there. So if you want to roster Sam Burns, that's great. The first team I built did not have Sam Burns, but I'm sure I'll be building some teams with him, because I agree with you. I mean, talk about up and coming. If you're looking at this list in terms of just sheer talent and guys that will maybe we'll be talking about in a different context, maybe this time next year, for example, I think Sam Burns is right up there. Now, don't get me wrong. He's not the only guy. There's at least like 10 guys here that I think are sort of on the youngish end. That, like, Mito Pereira is a guy that I think, I mean, in a year from now, I think we're going to be talking about him in a much different context. So we'll get to him. Will Zalatoris, of course, is here, but we know he's going to be there as well. So I like Sam Burns here. I think Sergio was interesting, obviously coming off the win, but, you know, his recent form has been really good too. And if he has confidence coming in here with the putter, that means a lot to me.
Yeah, let me put a bow on Sam Burns here. So you talk about that ceiling, and to win golf tournaments, you need to hit your ceiling. Sam Burns gained at least 5 strokes on the field in a single round in 12% of his rounds last season. It was the highest rate on tour. He cleans up that one bad round each week that he seemingly likes to have. He's going to be winning a lot of golf tournaments. Also, Bermuda grass greens, by far his best putting surface. You mentioned Sergio. He's got to come back from Whistling Straits. There's always going to be that narrative around the how taxed is he physically and emotionally from a Ryder Cup in which he played a lot of golf and came up on the short end of the outcome. So we can talk about that, but also Sung Jae Im, Corey Connors, are we going anywhere else in this 10K range, or is it kind of Sam Burns, Sergio, are they the 1A, 1B type golfer?
You know, with Sung Jae Im, part of me wants to say, like, I don't know that he has the upside of some of these other guys, but he did finish second here in 2020. So, like, clearly he has upside to win this entire thing. I think in this range, I don't think I'm going to be on Corey Connors, surprisingly enough. I know he gets a lot of airtime on this show, and it's for good reason, but I think it's going to be Sam Burns and Sung Jae Im for me. I may sprinkle a little bit with Garcia and Will Zalatoris, but right now it's Sam and Sung Jae that are my favorite here.
Sung Jae Im back to his ball striking ways. He gained strokes off the tee in 6 consecutive events at the end of last season. He gained strokes on approach in 4 of his last 5, highlighted by a third place finish at the BMW Championship. This is going to be obviously a much weaker field than we saw at the BMW, and Bermuda is by far his best putting surface. So all things should be clicking in the direction of Sung Jae Im. Corey Connors, I tend to agree with you. I think he's just the odd man out. I like him. He's been very safe. He's been piling up top 25 finishes. I think he's just going to be trimmed because I like other guys more. And I think that's okay to say.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not a, it's not a knock on him ultimately. You can only have so many guys up here.
Correct. You cannot roster all five of these 10K guys, believe it or not. And actually, as we get further, it might be hard to roster one of these guys. We're going to have to get creative. That 9K range offers a little bit more salary cap relief. Mito Pereira already up to $9,900. Keegan Bradley at 97 and Siwoo Kim at 9,500. The bottom of this range is Cameron Tringale at 94, Sebastian Munoz at 93, HV3, that's Harold Varner III, at 9,200. And finally, Cam Davis at 91 and Charlie Hoffman at a flat $9,000. This is where things start to get interesting. There are guys in this range that I like, and there are guys in this range that I'm not particularly fond of. What do you see when you start assessing this range?
Well, I'll say this. I mean, you can absolutely, and I think I say this every show, you can absolutely start your builds in the 9K range. As much as I might like the upside of Sam Bird and Sungjae Im, I mean, the upside for Mito Pereira, for example, and honestly, even a Keegan Bradley or Sebastian Munoz, like all of these guys have the requisite upside to take down this tournament. So again, from a saving standpoint, I think Mito is a fine starting point.
Yeah, Mito's been phenomenal. He has already four top five finishes in his last six starts. That's worldwide. That includes the Olympics. He's doing it in a way that's super sustainable, which is via the ball striking. Yeah, he's a magnet towards the top of the leaderboard. He was all last season at the in the Korn Ferry Tour, and he has been in his short run here up on the PGA Tour since coming up on July 4th. Now, the rest of this range, you mentioned Keegan Bradley, who I actually think is kind of interesting. Who else might be making some of your lineups in the 9,000s?
Yeah, you know, I like Keegan. I'm definitely going to be playing him. So it's Keegan and Mito for me. And then as I go down the list in the 9K range, there's two other guys. Well, there's really three other guys that jump out at me. And I'm honestly, Rick, I'm hoping you can kind of narrow those three down for me a little bit. One of them is Sebastian Munoz. I think this is a good course fit for him. He obviously has won here before, so I'm not breaking any news by saying he's a good course fit. When he won in 2020, he had a 23rd place finish in 2021. That's fine. I don't think he's going to get himself into much trouble here, which is nice when you're rostering Sebastian Munoz. Cam Davis is the other guy, Rick. I know you're generally a fan of his. Yeah. You know, he's been a little kind of middling over the last month or two, but you know, we know he took down a tournament. He was sixth here last year. And obviously he's a good course fit here if we're looking for distance off the tee. And then the last guy I'll just mention is Charlie Hoffman. I'm kind of always on Charlie Hoffman. I do think he's a value here in this field at 9,000.
Yeah, I think that generally when you start to see the course model look like this, which is one that rewards distance over accuracy and one that rewards approach play more than average, that is generally a good spot for Cam Davis. I do worry, even despite his victory, his advanced metrics at the end of last year weren't all that good. I mean, he won the Rocket Mortgage in kind of non-traditional Cam Davis style, which was only gain a little bit off the tee, be reliant on your short game. That's a little bit scary. And the rest of the run down the end of last season was not very good, to be quite frank. So I do like Sebastian Munoz, you know, someone who has the ability to get hot, obviously someone who has won this event. I probably put him first out of the names that you mentioned. There's a little bit of love for certainly for Cam Davis. And then, yeah, what, like Charlie Hoffman, seemingly a lock to just be inside the top 25, which he has done each of his last two trips to the Country Club of Jackson. But like, what is Charlie Hoffman's legitimate real upside at this point?
That's sort of the question. But like, when you look at his metrics, they're sort of like too good to ignore. I mean, birdie or better gained over the last 50 rounds. He's number one. Strokes gained off the tee, last 50 rounds, number 20. Strokes gained approach, number one. So I agree with you on the upside thing. But at the same time, I think my response would be, well, to the extent Charlie Hoffman has any upside, it would be realized in a field like this and on a course like this. You know, to the extent Charlie Hoffman can win a tournament, it's these types of tournaments where you're like, oh, okay, I guess that makes sense. You know, the model's kind of coming true, like all of a sudden, like this works. This makes sense to me. So when you have guys at, like near the top that are Sam Burns, no disrespect to him, but I don't think Charlie Hoffman is walking onto this course feeling very intimidated by that.
The only other guy that I have interest in, and this is rare for me, Sia, because I generally don't roster a lot of Harold Varner III. I just don't. It doesn't end up happening. I think this might be the week. So last 24 rounds, he's top five in strokes gained approach. I love that. And of those top five, he's the only guy who's gaining strokes putting in those 24 rounds. And he's gaining a lot, a half a stroke per round. It's basically a full stroke better than anybody else in the top five of the approach category. And then you go and look at his recent results and you see, okay, well, he finished 16th at the Fortinet. That was in Napa. Then he finished 12th at the BMW Championship, 11th at the Northern Trust. This is a really good stretch of golf for someone who in theory might be able to get hot with the irons and wedges and roll the putts in. And I'm not generally rushing to roster him.
Yeah. I mean, here's my thing on HV3. First of all, I like the recent form quite a bit. So I'm with you on that. And I don't think he's a bad play. I will say this, however, and it's my rule that I've sort of dropped on this show. If he is popular, if he is quote chalky, fade him. Like, just it's not worth it. And I'm not trying to be unscientific about it. I mean, we know there's variance in golf anyway, so you should be fading the chalk, particularly in these GPPs. But like, when it's chalk and it's Harold Varner III, it's I'm done here. We're good.
It's like Louis chalk. When Louis popular, when Louis 25% owned, you fade that. When Louis 6% owned, that's the time.
We could go all day here. Like, speaking of Jason Day, like when he's chalk, I'm like, nope, I'm out. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I do worry about that. I do worry about finally finding the spot that everybody finds on Harold Varner III. I'm worried. We'll have to do a little bit of soul searching. But to your larger point, so we spent a lot of time in this range, whether it's Hoffman, Davis, Varner, Munoz, Keegan, Mito. That's literally all but two guys in this range that we have somewhat of a positive sentiment on. So you could really... or I guess maybe I should phrase this as a question. Could you really bypass the guys at the top, as much as you love Sam Burns, or I love Sam Burns, and start here and then not have to go down to the depths of the $6,000 range and find guys that round out your lineups?
Oh yeah, especially in these tournaments that end up being birdie fests. I mean, we know that there's so much more volatility from the ground up, in other words, from the 6K tier up, when you have birdie fest. That's just the reality of the situation. So there's never a lock in a tournament like this where you have like the birdie fest, for example. It's such an overused term. I wish I could come up with something better, but the point is, let's think about that. But the point is, it's very easy for me to envision every single one of these 10K guys and Sam Burns at 11K being just kind of middling relative to the guys in the 9K. I could absolutely see that scenario. So I would say this from a DFS standpoint, I'll be starting half my lineups in the 9K and probably half of them with one of these 10K guys or above.
A scoring extravaganza. That seems too long. Doesn't roll off the tongue.
Excoriganza. We'll come up with some mesh of words. It'll be better.
We'll figure it out.
Birdie Fest of best. Whatever.
We will go down to the 8K range. We will go down to the 7K range, and we will even tread down to the 6K range, hopefully very lightly. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And we're back. $8,000 range. I actually, as I was going through this after lineups came out very late on Monday, I was actually going through and I was like, oh, okay, this 9K range, that's not so bad. This 8K, okay, this actually isn't so bad. So like I was actually pleasantly surprised with what I saw from this $8,000 range, and I won't read them all. Yeah, well, here we go. Kevin Streelman, Seamus Power, Emiliano Grillo, Carlos Ortiz, and Matthew Wolf. That is the top half of the $8,000 range. The bottom half of it, Gary Woodland, Aaron Wise, Patton Kizzire, CT Pan, Doug Gim, and Matthias Schwab rounding out your $8,000 range. So, Sia, are you as surprisingly excited about this range as I am?
Towards the top, I am. I think towards the bottom, I'm not really that interested. I have a couple surprises, I think, towards the middle and the bottom that guys I don't normally roster. But just starting with the top end of the 8K range, I'll probably pass over Streelman. He's had success here, but, you know, just course fit wise, I think I can do better from an upside standpoint.
He's going to be really popular too.
Right, right.
He's got three out of his last. So he's played. He didn't play here last year. In the 4 years previous, three top 18 finishes. Played well at the Wyndham. Played well. He's going to be popular at 8,900.
And I'll go ahead and just pay up for the basically what I think is a better version of Kevin Streelman, and that's Keegan Bradley. So I'm, you know, that's sort of the trade-off there for me. As we go down the list, though, I think Seamus Power, I mean, what's really interesting about Power, first of all, he's been very good.
Yes.
Second of all, his history here is, unless I'm reading this wrong, I mean, he's played here four times dating back to 2017, which is really interesting for kind of a relative newcomer to the PGA Tour. And he's been pretty good. I mean, other than a missed cut, he's been top 30 in each of those editions. And those were editions of himself that were not as good as the edition we're seeing right now.
That's correct. Yeah, he is much better now than he was. I mean, you can even see it on this chart here. I mean, from, you know, he was a slow climb in running strokes gained total up until the end of 2018. And then he really started to struggle. And then now it's been this kind of, I don't want to call it a meteoric rise, but it really has been. He has six top 20 finishes in his last eight starts. One of them was a victory at the Barbasol Championship. And then he finished 31st at the Northern Trust. That was a playoff event. That is where his season ended. He did not move on to the BMW Championship, but you're right, Sia. He is certainly playing the best golf of his career, and he is priced to move at $8,800. So it's kind of interesting. Anyone else in this upper 8K range that you are excited about? There's a couple guys that give me worry, but are you excited about anyone?
Yeah, there's a few guys. I think I'd be willing to take a chance on Carlos Ortiz. The metrics are not going to be good on him, but his course history is really good. And I think we've done this exercise before, my experience, and I haven't run the data here, Rick, but is that course history typically trumps recent form. In what I mean by that is that if you have bad recent form and you have really good course history, usually the course history bears itself out. And Ortiz, a fourth in 2020, a third in 2019, missed cut in 2021. I think he has a chance to shine. And we know a guy like Carlos Ortiz can get hot as well.
Those results that Sia mentions, they equate to gaining about 2.2 strokes per round on the field in his history at the Country Club of Jackson. It is 3 years. That is the most of anyone, not only in this field, but anyone on tour with at least 10 rounds played. So this is very clearly a good spot for him. If you start to look at what his recent form is, it can get a bit hairy, but hold on, I just had it up here. We go back to that same exercise, which is 24 rounds. This is the same setup that I mentioned, Harold Varner III being the fourth best approach player. Carlos Ortiz is the fifth best approach player in those 24 rounds. Now, he has been horrid with the flat stick, but you think maybe a couple of weeks to kind of get his stuff figured out, maybe he can come back and roll the rock a little bit better at a place that he has had good success at.
Yeah, and I'll say this. The only other two guys that I'm going to be looking at are Aaron Wise and CT Pan. I'll start with Aaron Wise. I mean, obviously, he's a guy that can really struggle with the putter, but it's not that I'm ignoring that, but I do think it's minimized a little bit just based on some of the past winners and some of the past successes here. And CT Pan, like I'm almost ready to say that CT Pan is, you know, a pretty good golfer. Like in my model, he's within the top 35. Approach has been pretty good. I mean, I'm going back a number of rounds. I went to 50 rounds for this particular tournament, but the proximities, you know, the wedge sort of proximities are decent. I think he does have some upside. I think he's flashed recently.
Yeah, he finished sixth at the Fortinet and 12th here last year. Obviously, he got that. could you imagine if I would have listed off the names that were in that bronze medal playoff in Tokyo? And I would have said, who wins this thing? CT Pan would have probably been a pretty unpopular selection, yet he was the one that came out victorious. Very, very exciting to see. We have to do the Matthew Wolf conversation because this is now the second, I'm going to call it extended break for Matthew Wolf. The first one was him taking time off after the Zurich Classic for about 2 months before coming back to the US Open. And at that US Open for at least the first two and a half rounds, and even on the advanced metric sheet, looked really good. Looked like vintage for a guy who's as young as Matthew Wolf, but you get the point, playing to his DNA. And then he wasn't necessarily able to keep that up for the rest of the season. And now we've had about another 5 week stretch for him to hopefully figure out the woes with the driver. That's the thing. Matthew Wolf will go as far as his driver allows him to. And he has been very bad off the tee over the course of, I mean, geez, the last year or so, basically. So do we have any level of expectations for Matthew Wolf when he gets out to the Country Club of Jackson?
I mean, I'm playing him. If I'm playing him at all, it's showdown or like first round leader. I just don't trust it over four rounds. And if I get burned because Matthew Wolf is all of a sudden great over 4 days, then so be it. I'm willing to accept that.
I have no idea what I'm going to do. I think he's priced in a way. This is like DraftKings playing a little bit of defense. I know our friends over at Caesars playing a little bit of defense as well. They're not going to get burned on this, but it's like, I don't know how excited I am to pay 8,500, or I think he was 40-1 last time I saw him. It's fascinating. I will probably tread carefully, take a wait and see approach, but I'm obviously rooting for him. I hope he goes out and plays well. $7,000 range. I will not read all of these names. They start with Brendan Todd, Joseph Bramlett. They go all the way down to a handful of guys at the $7,000 range, including Mississippi State's own Chad Ramey, Roger Sloan, Sepp Straka, also at $7,000 flat. Let's find some value here, Sia, because if you are going to play maybe two guys in the 9K range, maybe you're going to go up and get one of those guys in the 10K range. This is probably a natural landing spot for a lot of your players.
Yeah, and it's not a spot that I love, to be honest with you. I'm not in love with the 7K range, but there are a few guys I have my eye on. Let's see. One of them is Luke List. I think Luke List, listen, his recent form hasn't been good. His course history really isn't very good, other than a second place finish in 2017, which is pretty impressive. Other than that, it's a couple missed cuts. But I just think I'm willing to ignore the recent form with Luke List. I've seen him flash before, and I think in this field, he could actually do really well. We know he's good off the tee. We know he's good, you know, pretty good on approach. It's really the putter that tends to hold him back the most. So Luke List is one of my guys here. And
that
let's
was nice.
See.
That was nice of you to say holds him back the most. Yeah, he's terrible. Wow, he's bad. Terrible with the putter. But, you know, I do think you're right from the perspective of he doesn't trend. He just pops, right? I mean, here's a great example. Charles Schwab Memorial Palmetto. Miscut, miscut, miscut. T4 at the John Deere, T5 at Barbasol. It's not like you're going to necessarily see it coming, which is why getting Luke List at presumably a pretty good price and almost certainly low ownership with a little bit of popping ability, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, and so the thing is, if you go with the narrative that a bad putter could be good on these greens, or at least average on these greens, I mean, those two tournaments you just flashed there, I mean, he gained 10 in one of them and 6+ in the other one. So it's the kind of thing, again, you're looking for guys that can flash really in any golf tournament. And I don't think he's going to find much trouble here, especially with that ball striking. So if the putter can be average, I think he's in good shape. Another guy that's really good off the tee that I like in this range is Patrick Rogers, who has also flashed recently. He's been pretty good. I think it was a six at the Fortinet. His history here is, you know, kind of middling, miscut, 61st, 14th. Nothing to write home about, but honestly, I think he's in a nice little zone here. So he's another guy, and I'll just give you one other name here. Henrik Norlander. I think I put something out on Twitter today where I was going to put Henrik Norlander as a first round leader. I think I'm going to add Matthew Wolf to that, by the way. And it was just a random thing that I put out there, but I probably will play that. I think Henrik Norlander is also the type of guy that his game has actually improved. We might've talked about him 3-4 weeks ago where Norlander maybe 6 months ago was really, really bad. And I think especially we saw it at the Olympics. We saw it at a couple of the other tournaments he's played. He's been a lot better. And I think this is a course that really like meets his specifications quite well.
Yeah, T5 at Barbasol just a couple of starts ago. He also had a very good finish here last year. He finished fourth. He's $7,200. I do not like this range. I do not like this range much at all. Joseph Bramlett at $7,900. Kind of interesting. So it's not going to necessarily show up here on the cheat sheet or if you're just looking at his PGA Tour results, but he won the Korn Ferry Tour Finals four weeks ago, he won that event. He had a couple of top 20s at the end down the stretch there on the Korn Ferry, and he did make the cut at the Fortinet. He's a long hitter, not a very accurate one. As we know, that is generally a pretty good model. If you're going to do that somewhere, doing it at the Country Club of Jackson is not the worst place to do it. And then I continue to think David Lipsky is going to be 10 to 12 starts ahead of his peers here, Sia, because Lipsky's now played, I think, like 20 PGA Tour events, including a 22nd last week at the, or 2 weeks ago at the Fortinet. He had a 64 on Friday. It was one of the low rounds of the day. And he, you know, it's weird being on tour for the first time. He's got a little bit more experience than everybody else. He'll be a little bit more comfortable, I think, in these early starts than some of these other, you know, recent grads or guys that now have their tour card. But otherwise, this 7K range, man, is ugly.
So let me give you another guy that, and by the way, I love your Lipsky call, and you made that call at the Fortinet, which you might have just said, but that was pretty impressive because he was quite good. I mean, he kind of tailed off a little bit, but he was quite good. So I like the call there. But Matt Wallace is another guy that might be just improperly priced here at 7,100. I mean, he's good off the tee. He's even better on approach. Okay with the putter. The proximities that we'll be focused on, he's pretty good there. And his birdie average is good as well. I know we don't have much recent form or course history to go on, but
yeah, he's good. Played. Yes, correct. So our last, the Northern Trust, I believe, is the last one that we have for him. He's played two European events since then. He's missed the cut in both, but he's still three starts removed from a T8 on the European Tour, which was the Kazoo Open. So I agree. I think that there's certainly enough talent from the world's number 74 ranked player because he is being priced below many other not very good players. So what about Sepp Straka? Sepp Straka is like your Luke List kind of guy. It's either going to be miscut or top 15 finish. I don't know. With this.
I don't mind that. It's just his history here is pretty bad. Three miscuts in a row doesn't speak to me.
He's such a freak. All right, let's try out the $6,000 range. If you thought the 7K range was ugly, welcome to the 6K range. So starts out with Brian Stewart, Grayson Sieg, Hudson Swafford, Nick Hardy, Rory Sabatini. We can talk about him. Goes all the way down to Min Price. Oh boy, JJ Spahn is Min Price. William McGirt is Min Price. Paul Barjon, who's actually, I actually think much better than this, is Min Price. Was 42nd at the Fortinet, has made three PGA Tour cuts in a row, played well on the Korn Ferry last year. Sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. See, a $6,000 range. Is there anybody, I don't even want to say appetizing. Is there anybody like palatable? Like what can we handle here in the 6K?
There was a guy in one of the lineups I made that was really, really low, and I'm trying to find him. I think he was 6,200. Let's see here. Man, I'm gonna have to find him later because I definitely was able to put him into my lineup with like some semblance of confidence, but I'll find him later. But there's not much here, obviously. I think Hudson Swafford is interesting. As I go down the list, Adam Shank is there, and Adam Shank has been pretty solid lately.
Yeah.
I don't mind rostering him. I think if Greg were here, I think Camilo Villegas would probably be the name coming out of his mouth here. Other than that, there's just not a lot here. Trey Mullinex is a guy that I think is interesting. You know, he's coming off, I guess he's coming from the Korn Ferry Tour, but he's had some PGA Tour experience as well. And I do think he hits it quite a long way. So I'm gonna have to look at his distance numbers. But other than that, Rick, there's just not a lot here that I'm super excited about. Wyndham Clark's another guy, by the way.
Wyndham Clark is kind of interesting. John Augenstein, I'm keeping an eye on. He's $6,700, All-American out of Vanderbilt, and he has played. He's played I don't want to say a bunch, but like 8 to 10 events on the PGA Tour in 2021. Most of them have not gone well, but the last three he's made cuts in. Charles Schwab, he was T20. Wyndham, he was T37 and then T6 at the Fortinet. And he has gained strokes on approach in five straight PGA Tour starts. He's gained strokes putting in three straight. There's going to be this kind of weird learning curve for a lot of guys who are now playing much more often on the PGA Tour. And I'm excited to see what Augenstein becomes. Again, All-American out of Vanderbilt. But you look at the rest of these names here, this really starts to kind of dictate how, and I hate that this is going to start to dictate how I build my lineup, Sia, but there's just really nothing to be excited about. I mean, if you want course history, Denny McCarthy is 6,600 and has three consecutive top 20 finishes at the Country Club of Jackson. Great mm-hmm. putter in general, great on Bermuda as well, but it's ugly, my friend.
Yeah, I think a sneaky name is at 6,800 is Sahith Theegala, another guy that Greg mentioned a few shows ago. I was probably at the Fortinet where he did make the cut and finished respectably. You know, I was on a different show and I had heard from somebody that Sahith actually had a wrist injury over the last. This is third hand here, so I don't want to like break news here, but that was sort of holding him back over the last year or so to some degree. And my understanding was that wrist injury is fully healed. And I think he might be a guy because of that ready to pop a little bit more than people expect.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on Sahith. All right, here's what I'm going to do. Top of the 6K range. I mean, we might just roll with Rory, right? The other Rory, Sabatini, 10th at the Wyndham. We know he finished in second silver medal at the Olympics. Last two trips to Jackson, a 12th and a 20th. I feel like I can trust that a little bit. And I was digging more into Paul Barjon, who I saw on the Korn Ferry Tour last year. He is the min price. So he made the cut at the Fortinet. His start before that was a T4 at one of the final Korn Ferry events. Made the cut at the Albertsons Boise Open. Again, one of those final Korn Ferry Tour events coming down the stretch there. Has made three cuts in a row on the PGA Tour. Listen, if 6K Paul Barjon makes the cut and gets me access to a lot of other golfers in the 10 and 9K range, like, I don't know, man. They're all the same, sub like 7,300.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. If I'm going all the way down to 6K, I mean, I'll throw another guy's name in the ring here. It's JJ Spahn.
Yeah, JJ Spahn, he was min price, right? That's what those were the guys I shouted out here. So JJ Spahn, absolutely min priced. He's made the cut. Actually, two top 36 finishes in his last three trips to the Country Club of Jackson for Mr. Spahn. So, okay, this week, what would be too chalky, right? So, like, if we get Kevin Streelman, like, what number are we willing to play Kevin Streelman? What number would you start to get concerned around some of the guys in the 10K range? We often talk about kind of fading that chalk, especially for PGA, especially here early in the year where we might not have seen some of these guys play in 5 weeks. Some of these guys have not played on the PGA Tour in 5 weeks. We don't know what they're up to. What is our general risk tolerance for this week?
Yeah, I think if you see guys, and I don't think there's going to be anybody super chalky here. If there is, it's going to be maybe like one or two guys. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Mito just gets a ton of airtime over the next few days and he becomes chalky. But I think once you see a guy that's like in the 15% range or higher, I think you really have to reconsider rostering him no matter how much you like him. I mean, that doesn't mean you shouldn't play him, but I just think with this type of tournament, you're going to see so much variance, volatility, if you will, that it just doesn't seem worth it to roster a guy that's like 19 or 23%. Now, 15% is kind of a lower mark. And I only gave a lower mark because there's, other than maybe a couple guys, I just don't think there's going to be a lot of like super chalk, like 23, 24, 25%. But as soon as it creeps past 15%, I'd really give a hard look to asking yourself or telling yourself, hey, do I really, really like this guy? Because I'm going to be moving along with the pack to some degree if he does well.
This concludes our DFS preview for the Sanderson Farms Championship, which Sia is... I said top five. It might be a top three trophy on the PGA Tour, which is the Rooster. Other ones in the mix, the Rocket Mortgage Excalibur type thing that comes out of its base. And, oh boy. You got to think trophy. Jackets don't count. So you got to think trophy. I don't know. I'll have to compile a complete list, but this is a good one.
Safeway barrel was up there.
Safeway barrel.
But they got rid of that.
Now it's the worst one. Now the Fortinet is literally the worst trophy on tour. They went from top three to the worst.
Can I tell you my favorite? It's the CJ Cup, but it's actually a plaque.
It's a plaque?
Yeah.
Hold on.
If I remember correctly, it's...
But why do you like that one though?
Because I just love like the just sort of FU nature of like we're calling a tournament the CJ Cup, but the trophy's a plaque.
It's a square it's like a square, it's not a cup at all.
It's not a cup. Hold on, let me pull it up.
That's so bad. It's not a cup. What are they doing? Oh, there's a good one. If you can find the one with Coke Rack. Yeah. Okay. So scroll down a little bit further. Coke Rack has it in one hand, like up over his head. I don't know if we're going to be able to find it. Oh, man. I don't know. There it is on the right. The middle one, middle on the right hand side, second from the right. Yes. That's the one. Look at this. It's not even a cup. Jason Coke Rack's got it in one hand over his head.
Yeah. That's disgusting. That's not right. We can't do that.
At some point, we will have to do a definitive rankings of PGA Tour trophies, but we're going to have to set some rules because the green jacket doesn't count. And also, if it's PGA Tour, maybe it shouldn't count at all. But
and can you guys please tweet at us maybe like synonymous phrases for Birdie Fest? I think we should have like five in the hopper. Also, a new word for hopper because I don't know what else to use there. So you have two homework assignments to everybody listening.
Give us some new vocabulary, please, and we will work them into the show. Let me thank producer Jacob, does all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there, it's Sia Najat. Tweet all your new phrases, whatever you want. Tweet anything you want at Sia Najat on Twitter. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.